Welcome to Let's Talk, brought to you live by the National Indigenous Radio Service, the only opportunity offered to the broader community to be informed on the issues and current affairs from a First Nations perspective. This is Amy McQuire with Let's Talk.
Good morning and welcome to Let's Talk. First of all, I'd like to acknowledge the continuing sovereignty of all First Nations people all across the country. I'd like to acknowledge my elders past and present and the elders of more recent arrivals. Welcome to our listeners if you tuned in across the nation via the National Indigenous Radio Service. And if you're listening on the web, 989fm.com.au, or on the podcast a little bit later, welcome to you as well. It's great to have your company this morning. Now, today we're going to be talking about a different history in Queensland, a different Black history, because obviously we often talk about the suppression of Aboriginal history all across this continent. But today we're going to talk about the suppression of history around South Sea Islanders. So there were the thousands of Pacific Islanders who were brought over as slavers, in sort of a form of slavery to Queensland to work in the sugar industry. And today we're talking to a South Sea Islander woman who's been very involved in sort of resurrecting that history and bringing it to public attention. Her name is Imelda Davis. She's a South Sea Islander woman and the president of the Australian South Sea Islanders Association, Port Jackson. And it's going to be the start of an ongoing series for Let's Talk, hoping to shed a light on this forgotten history. Now, the series is called The Forgotten Queenslanders, but as we hear today in Imelda's interview, it also stretched into New South Wales, and a lot of the descendants of South Sea Islanders are currently living down south.
The Forgotten Queenslanders, a Let's Talk series on the sugar slaves with Amy McQuire.
So I'd firstly also like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the nation on which we're speaking on, and elders past and present, and acknowledge those many South Sea Islander ancestors as well that lost their lives as a part of developing the economical base alongside our Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander brothers and sisters and grandfathers and forefathers. My name's Imelda Davis, and I'm the president of an organisation called the Australian South Sea Islanders, which is based in Sydney, Port Jackson. And our organisation has been running for about 6 or so years now. But originally, I'm born in Brisbane. I'm from the Tweed. My grandfather, Moses Tope Anez, was brought over here, that's my mother's father, from Vanuatu at the age of 12 years old. He was taken off the beach in Tanner Island. And as you know, there's been a strong movement coming out of Tweed Heads in relation to Australian South Sea Islanders, where the first organisation was founded by Auntie Phyllis Corowa, and that was my mother's sister, and her husband, Zane Corowa. On my grandmother's side, she was born on a plantation in Maryborough, up near Harvey Bay region. I think it was Denison Plantation, Irrawarra Plantation, Denison, sorry. She was born to Sarah Bookie Tor, or I think they say Tawa. And her father was Terry Santo. And in terms of tracing their specific heritage in connection with Indigenous Australia, that's still something that we're looking into. But it's believed to be Torres Strait region, right, and Harvey Bay region, but South Sea Island descent as well.
Right, but so they might have ended up coming back down to Maryborough, is what you're saying, South Sea mob, but
yeah,
went to Torres Strait.
Yeah, I've recently, as I mentioned the other day, had DNA done just out of sort of just getting another perspective on identity, and it sort of included the Cape York, Torres Strait, right out to Papua, and of course over to Vanuatu regions in terms of my DNA. And I believe that it's sort of in line with the oral histories that we've been hearing from families. So Yeah, it's interesting. It's still, you know, a long way to go and trying to piece it all together. So
it's very, very interesting because growing up, particularly when you look at your grandfather coming over from Vanuatu, being taken as such a young kid, did you grow up knowing a lot about his story, or did the family know about his story?
He actually passed away at the when I was born. So I was born in 1961. I'm 54 now, but he passed away and. Basically, he English was a second language, so he was, I guess, you know, the oppressive lifestyle was to not speak your language, otherwise you get flogged, and to forget about home. So the family grew up knowing some things, you know, the fact that he walked to escape the White Australia policy to Sydney.
He walked all the way to Sydney.
Yeah, the deportation. So that was, you know, quite an interesting, you know, resilience, and you sort of wonder why you are the people you are today when you hear stories such as this, you know, as people of colour around the world, you know, and being oppressed and enslaved and sort of defying the odds. And, yeah, walk to Sydney, and Auntie Phyllis Corowa talks about that in Sugar Slaves, and he worked as a kitchen hand, again, being oppressed and undermined and ripped off. And then he came back to the Tweed and settled with and had, you know, 11-plus children. So,
oh, God, so yeah, a big mob you have.
Yeah, it is a big mob. And you know what? It's been so dispersed, and because, you know, it's so hard to sort of really define and pinpoint, because, you know, people are just concerned with surviving, putting food on the table, and you've got a lot of different stories about the islands and how, you know, really they took entire families and brought them out here, displaced them, and then you've got this interracial connection or marriage, generational marriage between cousins and mobs. So there's a whole lot of confusion around that. So, yeah. Very interesting.
I guess for our listeners who don't know, and I think even a lot of Queenslanders may not know the true history, can you tell me a little bit about the wider history of why Pacific Islanders were brought into Queensland?
Well, really, it's you know, it's a slave labour. People argue that, oh, well, it's indentured, they signed contracts. So 60-odd thousand were brought from Vanuatu and Solomon Islands to work and establish the economical base here in Australia, clearing the land alongside Aboriginal Australians, Torres Strait Islanders. And then you had the mob coming in through missionaries through the Torres Strait. And we've got to remember that also Sydney was a port in the 1790s. Well, it still is a Pacific receiving port. So 1847, Benjamin Boyd bought the first lot of mob from Loyalty Islands and Tanner Island, and brought them into New South Wales, Eden. And then the influx, obviously, was through labourers working on boats coming into the ports, as well as 1863, where you saw the majority of those mob brought into Queensland from the islands and spread throughout the coastal areas within the ports, and then also, you know, into Aboriginal sort of mainland areas. But, you know, it's a complex history that we have here. We were thrown in on the same missions, come under the same acts as Aboriginal Australia, and were absorbed under those acts as Indigenous Australians as well, as I was talking the other day. So, you know, to unpack a lot of what's going on. And, you know, I think there's a big mob that know the history. It's just that we're not supported in being able to bring it to the forefront and having, you know, sites or teachings in education that will support the untold story of our people. The stories are there within our communities across this nation, but because, you know, the government are turning a blind eye to the history and the significant history, that's why, you know, we sort of feel like, oh, well, no one really knows. And a lot of our own mob and our younger generations are losing that knowledge because it's been so oppressed for so many years. But we hope with the work that we're doing and the work that other organisations are continued to do and inspiring us to continue, you know, we can really make an impact at some point in the very near future, I hope.
Yeah, it's really fascinating because even particularly down south in New South Wales, people are shocked to find out that we had a slave trade in Queensland. And as you're talking about, obviously it started in New South Wales. I didn't know it started in New South Wales. But is that confronting, I guess, to you actually living down in New South Wales, that, that people could continue to be shocked by something like this, that Queensland was involved in the slave trade?
It is. Look, ACPJ have been quite an effective lobby group because we are situated closely with Canberra and, you know, at arm's length with New South Wales Parliament. And we've got Aunty Shireen Malamu, who sits on our board, who's well connected with that whole, being our first ATSIC commissioner and that whole sort of gamut of political lobbying and savvying civil rights movement. So, you know, we've had the opportunity myself in getting in front of some key sort of players such as, you know, Bob Carr and Pacific Island ministers and, you know, really sort of conscious people about what's going on in Australian politics. And these people had no idea. Bob Carr, who actually wrote the 1995 memorandum to Australian or to all his New South Wales ministers, thought that we were from about, you know, that Australian South Sea Islanders are recognised as a distinct cultural group. They need to be included in programs and services. You know, please keep them in mind when, you know, talking to social services and welfare. He didn't even know who the hell we were. He thought we were from Vanuatu. So he's all excited to meet these international guests. And then he looked at us and he just, but you wrote the memorandum. Like, it's just so...
You didn't obviously take a lot of interest, obviously. Ian.
Yeah, uninformed, uneducated. And Alex Greenwich, member for Sydney, he recently, 2013, worked with us in sort of lobbying New South Wales Parliament and getting New South Wales recognition pushed through for Australian South Sea Islanders. And he admitted in a symposium that we had that he was embarrassed to be so ignorant, you know, in relation to this other side to... Indigenous Australia in not knowing about the blackbird trade and not knowing about, you know, the descendants that are still surviving today. And he said it's just appalling. So, you know, he's committed and been working with us for the past 6 years as well in sort of bringing this to the forefront from New South Wales. So, yeah, there's a lot of ignorance out there and a lot of just untold. It's just a lot of denial by government. In being able to, you know, we call ourselves a multicultural celebrated society, but they're forgetting about First Nations people and, you know, the initial Pacific Islanders that came in here to establish the economical base for this country.
Well, I think you hit the nail on
the
head.
I don't know how we can celebrate multiculturalism. Sorry.
Amy. No, I was just going to say, I think you hit the nail on the head right there as to why they want to forget, because obviously the labour of South Sea Islanders and Aboriginal people and Torres Strait Islanders is why Australia is so prosperous today, isn't it? Particularly Queensland, it was built off the backs of black labour.
It is, it you know, and that's the thing, and it's continue of just, you know, oppression of people of colour in general worldwide. You know, this isn't unique to Australia. I mean, you look at Africa and Brazil and all those other countries, you know, built on the back of sugar slaves and oppressed Indigenous peoples. You know, the sooner we join together as people of colour, the sooner we're going to get some serious traction in our countries, you know, of Indigenous peoples. You know, it's just that's the challenge, is getting people to understand and think outside the box. We're all fighting the same fight, really, and it's all about recognition and inclusion and restoring our community, restoring our men, restoring our women, restoring our children and enthusing and inspiring our children, you know, through self-determination.
It's very interesting when you talk about just our connections as well, because you mentioned that your grandfather was facing deportation, and that was under an act that they were trying to send a lot of the Pacific Islanders back, and it was the predecessor for the White Australia policy, wasn't it? Can you tell me a little bit about that act? About they brought Pacific Islanders into this country. A lot of them were kidnapped. A lot of them were forced into slavery. Well, most of them were. A lot of them, like your grandfather, were children. You know, so why did they bring them in and then try and force them out?
Well, bringing them in because obviously. white fellas, and it has been stated in newspapers, white Australia found it hard working under these extreme conditions. They were devastating conditions.
White people couldn't work in the heat.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. You know, they can only, sip tea and, sit in the shade type of thing, and couldn't withstand the conditions that they needed to work under in order to get this work done. And, 15-odd thousand died in that 40-year period.
Wow, 15,000.
In the first 6 months, people were dropping off like flies. They were arriving dead on boats because of the maltreatment. So, bought in, cleared the land, and then all of a sudden, oh no, we can't have this. It's too black. It's too, it's getting too relied upon. And even you had the night workers. So when they bought in that white Australia policy, they'd still draw on the Kanakas to come out at night and, and work, from sunset to sunrise. And then the white fellows would step in and take all the glory. And you can see that I don't know if you've Googled some of these, ads about a white Australia policy and the hardworking men in the cane fields, and you've got all these white fellows cutting cane and standing up like they've, done all the hard work. But, it's a lot of this stuff is driven from fear and just pure racism, And you've got to remember, as we all know, Australia was a jail. It was a place where, a lot of the convicts were brought to serve their time, and they thought they could get around things, cheap and nasty with enslaving the human race to do this very hard work that those that were privileged didn't have time for, or thought they were better than. But, and then deportation, it's like with a stroke of a pen, it's like, okay, this act's been passed and let's just ship out 10,000-odd labourers or slaves, Melanesians, back to where they're from.
And why was that deportation?
With no consultation. Pardon?
Why was that deportation? Was it because I know that the other colonies were sort of leaning on Queensland. I think the other colonies thought it was quite disgraceful that Queensland had this slave trade, and it was sort of a barrier to Federation, wasn't it? I mean, why did they want to deport all these mob at that time?
There was resistance in terms of, civil rights, and because slavery was abolished on the other side of the world in 65 or 63, 65, they transferred it across here. But in terms of, there were people that had a heart. They considered human rights and the maltreatment of these people. And, the workers' union also wanted to dominate in terms of, getting jobs for white Australians. And
right, so white people were scared about jobs.
Sorry?
White people were scared about jobs, were they?
Yeah, self-employment and all of that sort of stuff. So, you couldn't have a person of colour rising above. It's just discrimination. It's not for any particular reason. It's just, things were looking good and I guess the economy was picking up. I mean, Australia's the third largest sugar provider in the world, and, you just can't have anyone getting ahead of you. In terms of, the powers that be that govern, being white Australian or white whatever, British colonists. And, it's a power thing,
And a lot of those
new
South Sea Islanders at the time, they fought very hard not to be deported back because obviously they had families over
they
here
did.
By that point, weren't, yep. didn't they?
Yeah, there was an organisation formed in Mackay that actually lobbied and sought something like 3,000 plus signatures and took that to Parliament, and that was sort of passed and some were allowed to stay, but they had to demonstrate, obviously, their interracial relations with Aboriginal Australia, families that are established, but then others, just weren't given that opportunity. So, and then, it's a challenge still today to really convince the government that we are still here. So nothing's really changed.
It was very,
We're still fighting for the same human rights.
So all the South Sea Islanders who are here in Queensland, New South Wales, all over the country today, they're all descended from these people who were allowed to stay following that act, are they?
The descendants of, yeah, they would be. I mean, I'm not legally savvy with that particular act, but I would say it would be an extension of that act. That's why, obviously, you're born here, you're a citizen, and those descendants, yes, would have been recognised as being allowed to stay. So out of those supposed 3,000 or so that were allowed to stay, which we know that's not so, there would have been many more because so many fled the border, a few thousand fled the border. Yeah, they would be descendants of that particular era or act that was passed.
And I mean,
anyone else had to leave.
It's really amazing because I think people assume that this happened a long time ago, but this happened to your grandfather, didn't it? It must be quite horrendous to think this is in the past when it's still connected to you.
It is. It's such a young history. And, you know, as Aboriginal Australia with colonisation, it's such a frustrating thing to have to deal with today. And people are saying, oh, we'll get over it, move on. Well, no, how about accepting it and we move on together? You know, but it's very simple. You know, it's nothing complex, but there seems to be this consistent push and we have to continually reinvent the approach as to how to convince these people that we should be considered. When everybody else that comes into the country, even contemporary Pacific Islanders today, have programs and services readily available and government funding committed without question. But we still have to convince people, no, we're Australian South Sea Islanders and, you know, we are descendants of and this is what happened. And it's this whole rigmarole, 24/7. There's no legislation that actually looks after our people, you know, today. And they say, oh, well, do you want to come under the Aboriginal banner? Well, sure, we do. But at the same time, we are a distinct cultural group and recognised for that in 1994. You know, and New South Wales recognised for that in 2013. So everyone else is so distinct and recognised and catered for. We should be the same.
It's really interesting. You raised a really important point because after deportation, obviously the people who remained had led very hard lives, didn't they? They're often on the fringe of society like Aboriginal people as well, weren't they? Because there weren't any services at all.
That's right, Plantation Creek. The Faith Bandler initiated the through the Evatt Foundation the 1992 call for recognition, which demonstrated very clearly, you know, the disadvantage of Australian South Sea Islanders specifically suffering the same exact disadvantage as Aboriginal Australia. And I can say it's probably worse off simply because we don't have the programs and services that cater for or our mob are going under the Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander banner in terms of identity. But we hope that with the up-and-coming census, because people need to not be fearful about how they identify, you need to stand proud in your South Sea Islander heritage. You need to stand up and let them know that we're still here because they need to provide this funding. Out of those 15,000 that died in that short period of time where the bones are still scattered across Queensland, New South Wales, and God knows where else in the country, you know, uncelebrated, unmourned, not commemorated for anything. Okay, out of those 15,000, there are specific bank accounts that had funds in where those funds did not go back to the families.
Yeah.
And yes, we recognise that that's impossible today, but working with demographers such as Professor Clive Moore and a number of other academics that we have on our website, they have come up with the mere fact that $38 million is owed with compound interest on those wages that were not paid back to the families. We're calling on those funds to actually set up an organisation that can assist, you know, the much-needed work in social welfare for our families, you know.
So there was an own form of stolen wages. There was an own.
Sorry,
there was another form of stolen wages, obviously, which was this specific island labourers fund that we never saw where that money went. I mean, obviously it would have just went into Queensland's infrastructure or something like that. It was absorbed into the state.
Well, it went back to the it's a Commonwealth issue. It went back to the Commonwealth, and you know that money was also used to deport during the White Australia policy. Some of those 10,000 that were sent back, as well on top of that, the misappropriation. The islanders had to pay £5 or 5 shillings or whatever it was in those days towards their own fares to go back because they were being deported.
They had to pay for their deportation.
Yeah, it was just disgraceful. They had to add to it by paying shillings or pounds or whatever it was in those days. But yeah, you know, I mean, Professor Clive Moore's written papers that are on our website that relate to this specific issue. But, yeah, you know, so there's a lot of untold stories. And it's not about, oh, look, here they go. They want to do this and they want to claim that. Well, no, we just want a better future for our children. We want a legacy for our forefathers. You know, we want monuments as everybody else gets celebrated, the Anzacs, so on and so forth. You know, this is, you know, as I say, White Australia has a blackbirding history as well as a black history.
It's really interesting, though, because you did mention it before. There is obviously so many South Sea Islanders who also have an Aboriginal history just from their families intermarrying, isn't there? So there's key connections between the two groups and obviously Torres Strait Islanders as well. It's actually quite fascinating to consider how many people have these dual identities.
Yes, look, it's just incredible. And that's what I say, our own communities don't understand the depth of. And I didn't understand. Like, I've learnt this in the last 6 years. And that's why self-determination is just critical for us. And it's given me so much confidence. There's not much money in it, but there's a lot of confidence coming. You know, I feel like I'm a bloody millionaire with the strength that I'm getting from the work that I'm doing in our communities. And the routes, there were over 800 plus routes that came from Vanuatu, Solomons, and all of those 80 surrounding islands that come to the coast of Queensland, New South Wales, and who knows where else, because there were operations, as Benjamin Boyd did, illegally in bringing Kanakas to this country in 1847. So then you've got all the ships coming in around all those coastal areas. You've got the ships going from port to port within those coastal areas, and then you've got labourers or slaves going into all the Aboriginal communities, and then all lobbed on the same missions.
So this is like you're talking about these routes. Is that all together on one map, or you're able to see that?
Yeah, we're almost there. It's going to be mind-blowing. I'm looking at it right now as we speak. But I've got a graphics designer that we're working with, and Professor Clive Moore, who's a 40-year historian in this area, for Australian South Sea Islanders and Pacific Island communities. So he's a celebrated academic, white fella, as you know. But, you know, hey, we've got to work together to make these things happen. And coupled with this map we will take out and share with the nation, but, you know, coupled with then we start having conversations around that and getting the community stories. But when you get this visual, tangible map, it's going to blow your mind because it's going to take us into those Aboriginal mainland areas where our mob were taken. And remember the massacres that happened there.
Yes.
And that's evident.
Well, that's what I was just going to say. Queensland doesn't realise that it had two slave trades, doesn't it? It had the slave trade of South Sea Islanders, but it also had the slavery of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders who were taken from their communities, as a lot of them as children, and their wages were all stolen. That's a form of slavery. So you had these two slave trades in Queensland that people don't realise about it. So to have that portrayed in that sort of graphic, I think, would be mind-blowing. I mean, no one else has ever done anything like that before.
Well, no, I'm very excited about this because I thought, how do we tell this story? Why people aren't, because I just keep thinking of ways to really reinforce this. And it's not about making people feel guilty. It's a history. Every other history is celebrated and recognised in this country. We need ours, you know, recognised and celebrated. You know, I'm proud of my grandfather's contribution. I'm proud of his resilience. I'm proud of our Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander, you know, resilience, you know, still here today, you know. But, yeah, this map's going to be quite quite significant in the scheme of things, and it'll be on T-shirts and billboards and God knows what else. Whoever will take it and put it up, you know, this is a real learning and teaching for our community, and I'm very proud to be a part of, you know, the development of this, you know, working with some great people such as yourself.
And so, yeah, and just to clarify, I guess, what does it show? It shows the roots coming in, bringing South Sea Islanders over here. But also, what else does it show when it gets to the mainland?
Well, it's just showing the dot. So it's basically, I don't know if you've seen the old map, which shows the routes where, you know, they come from Vanuatu, Solomons, and all of those little islands. So you've got routes dot pointed from, say, Fiji Islands all the way into Sydney. Then you've got New Caledonia dotted. They went direct to Eden. Then you've got from Vanuatu, Solomon Islands into the Torres Strait. And then you've got, you know, going up to Cape York and all along, you know, Cooktown, Cairns, Bowen, Mackay, all the different regions there. And then we're going to go further inland and show those routes where, you know, you've got people that come from Gilbert Island straight to Rockhampton. So it's just showing all of those specific routes that Professor Moore and other demographers have traced through their years and years and years of work. Professor Steve Mullins, who's on our advisory historical team, he did a lot of work in the Torres Strait, and he speaks about, and this reinforces the fact that, you know, the missionaries that come through the Torres Strait, the coming of the light being of Torres, of South Sea Islander, you know, development in the 1840s, coming over 3,000 plus came through the Torres Strait and settled or went on to or went back to through missionaries.
Right.
You know what I mean? So you've got the integration and the marriage and, you know, it's apparent, you know, St. Paul's is where we're looking to trace our mob back to. But
wow. So there's a real strong Torres Strait South Sea connection there.
Yeah, it's huge. It's huge. And you can't deny this. It's a fact. It's all documented.
It's really amazing because it's dotted through the Queensland landscape as well. I just think of Townsville, and very few people know who Townsville was named after, which was Robert Towns, who was one of the very first slave traders,
notorious,
isn't he? And people go to Townsville, they would have no clue what this man actually did.
Exactly, and John Mackay, you know?
Oh, I didn't know
terrific.
That. See, I didn't know that. See, and I grew up in Rockies, so
yeah.
I had no idea
so
that
John
that was
Mackay, me. Exactly. So John Mackay actually slaughtered Melanesian labourers. But, you know, that history is on our website as well. So, you know, you've got Benjamin Boyd, of course. Benjamin Boyd rode over here on the North Shore. Faith Bandler actually tried because she lived on the North Shore. Auntie Faith Bandler, who led the 1967 referendum, seeing Aboriginal Australia vote for the first time, she's of South Sea Islander descent. People get confused thinking that she's Aboriginal Australian. She's Umbai, woman Umbai. And she fought the council here, and they found a letter just recently saying that she wanted Benjamin Boyd Road changed. But no, they couldn't do that, but they put a park up in monument or recognition of her and the work that she did in terms of civil rights and contribution. Wow. So, you know, it's a challenge, and it's an untold history, and it's stuff that we need to really take control of, you know, through self-determination. It's just important that our kids get to see this stuff. So this map is going to be a great conversation piece more than anything, you know, because it sparks conversation and, you know, there's a lot to be talked about. And I think, you know, when the elders actually look at it, they'll be able to, you know, rethink or remember a lot of things that can contribute to the map. It's not that this map is set in stone. It's a conversation piece. You know, it's outlining who we are and where we've come from.
Oh, I think it'll be phenomenal
what we
to
are,
see that. It'll be
yeah,
really
amazing. Yeah,
what
we are today.
I just wanted to ask, bring it back to your grandfather. You said he walked by foot down to Sydney. What happened after he got to Sydney?
Well, he went to Sydney, and then he worked as a kitchen hand, and then he went back and he set up a banana farm on the northern rivers.
Right.
So there's a big mob up there that had banana farms. And, he just worked very hard, and he worked for land, or he worked for his freedom, so to speak. And settled on the Tweed and passed away in 61. So
was that a lot of his stories ever handed down to your mother and then handed down to you about how he was taken off his island?
Only I've got a recording from Professor Clive Moore's archives that talks about my Nana. It's her voice, and she speaks about the maltreatment on the boat, how they were put into the hole and they were given flour and water and people were sick, and he got here and it was just really hard. He didn't talk much about it because he couldn't speak that much English, but at the same time he was sort of oppressing it. Like, our family was sort of brought up not to know about Bislama or speaking any particular language. You had to be, I guess, for want of a better word, but the white way, like sort of, you know, behave a certain way, act a certain way. You know, it was all that kind of colonization stuff. Dress a certain way, you know, very oppressive sort of thinking. So there's not that much story there that I know of or that my mother even knew of in growing up. But they knew that this was their life now and they had to sort of do what they needed to do to survive.
When did you start to sort of think you can start to piece together and start reviving a lot of that history and finding out for yourself?
Well, in this last 6 years, because all of those 11 children, bar one, have passed away.
All right.
And, life circumstance gets in the way in terms of where I've been personally and some of my trials and tribulations. So the last 6 years is when I've started really sort of reaching out, and this work has sort of taken me on a roller coaster, which I feel very blessed and honoured to do. So, and with the support that, you know, community people and, you know, mob from up Tweed, and, you know, just always reassuring. So, yeah, and slowly people are saying, oh, no, look, we're connected through this way, or, you know, and I'm just trying to piece it all together to give a clearer picture. And remember, there was a lot of sort of denial in identity. So, you know, whether you're Aboriginal, Torres Strait, South Sea, you know, depending on how your family was, there was unspoken things, you know, things that weren't talked about with our elders.
A lot of it, so, I wonder if it has to do with the hurt and the trauma. You know, I think people don't realise that a lot of people bury a lot of those experiences because it hurts too much to talk about them.
Yeah, correct. And I know that my grandfather was hurt, and he was a hard man. He was a very sort of, you know, hard character. That's what I've heard in our stories, that he was a, you know, hardworking and hard man. You know, so the kids were brought up a certain way, and, you know, you just don't muck around. I know my Nana was real tough on me, you know what I mean? Like, you know, you get that iron cord or that switch off that willow tree, and, you know, even if you look the wrong way, you get knocked out. But, you know, I love my upbringing. I love my community, and I love the stories of survival, and that's what survival is, you know? It's like Auntie Shireen says, take a whinging pill, because there's someone out there who's worse off.
That's very sad. But I was just wondering if, you know, have you been back and found your village and your family, and what that must have felt like for you to be able to reconnect in that way?
Look, going back to Vanuatu was one of the most incredible experiences, and I didn't know what exactly it was, but it was something that, you know, I guess the emotion, you know, of not knowing and reconnecting with identity and being embraced by community. And we went back for the commemoration ceremony in 150 years of recognition since the first Kanaks were taken from Vanuatu, and that was just one of the most emotional journeys that everybody, there's about 150 odd people that came from Australia. But it was just incredible to sit in a sea of faces that just look like home, you know.
Yeah. It's amazing to be part of the majority for once, wouldn't it be?
Oh, it was just too deadly. And it's like people don't know until you open your mouth, or they might see that you dress a bit different. But you know what I mean? It's like, yeah, it was so exhilarating. Yeah, it was really, really good. Really good. You know, and people are just keen to find. I'm still getting emails. We're still trying to reconnect. We've run a couple of Find a Family workshops, one in Solomon Islands, and because of Cyclone Pam and Vanuatu, that was the challenge. But we did, working with the women, just talking about finding family, what that looks like, sharing some of the resources here, sharing some of the videos that I've filmed from the conferences here, and just giving people a sense of connection and belonging, and that you're not forgotten and we're not forgotten and we're all thinking of each other, and how do we build on this, you know, through our own resources, which is critical, you know.
It's really interesting, because I think what people don't realize is that, you know, those people left their islands and their villages, but they always remember that, like, they're central to their family story. So a lot of mom over in Vanuatu and Solomon Islands, I'm sure they'll be wondering whatever happened to their children as well from those villages, and what happened to their people who ended up going to Australia. Like, there's a big hole in their stories as well.
It's a massive hole. And in the Solomons, when we did the interview, it was quite emotional, because we put together an exhibition working with the Solomon Islands International Museum, and shared a lot of the contemporary photographs from here, as well as the historical backgrounds and Professor Moran writing up the text and things. And then when we went over there, they had these 6-foot panels exhibiting contemporary and past sort of histories, and it was incredible to walk into and just to see the reality of our history on these walls. And it was just people sharing and crying about my grandfather, my great grandfather, just, you know, there's so much mourning to do.
Yeah, so much mourning to do. A lot of healing to come as well.
Yeah. And to actually see it and realize it was just brilliant. It was just brilliant for all of us, you know. But, you know, the saga continues.
Well, that brings me to, I guess, the next question, and that's what's happening now, and what are you hoping happens with your group, Australian South Sea Islanders Port Jackson?
Okay, so what I'm hoping now is that everybody that's listening to this actual program gets behind the Australian Census. We've been placed more prominently on question 18 about the census. And it really is important in August that everybody participates in the identification, like identifying their South Sea Islander heritage. Even if there's some uncertainty and you know of, it's really important to actually, you've got your Aboriginal, your Torres Strait Islander identity on page 1 or 7, and then you go to question 18 and there's an ancestry question. So I think it's important that people try and pinpoint, you know, or have some sort of clarity around whether they have or are descendants of, and recognise and mark that box.
So they can mark it if they are Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander as well. They can also mark the South Sea Islander box.
Correct. And it doesn't take away from their initial identifying as Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander. It's merely doing an assessment, obviously, demographic, because of our lobbying, that people need to stand up and sort of say who they are, so that the government can get a clearer picture of what they need to do for us. If we don't stand up and be counted, we're not included. No one's interested, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, because they use those
being
publications.
Able to lobby for us.
Yeah, they use those population statistics for services, I guess.
Yeah, it's a numbers game. So ministers and people, and it's really sad that it works that way, but ministers and people don't get on board unless, you know, there's a significant number that they're representing. It seems to be the way, you know. And just on the other hand is that we're looking at the possibility of setting up a cultural organisation here in Sydney, a cultural hub. We're working with North Sydney Council, and that's Faith Bandler's
territory where she used to live, and she's now deceased, as we all know. But, you know, in memory of a lot of the South Sea Islander contribution, Australian South Sea Islander contribution, but looking at a broader inclusion of Indigenous Australia, of course, and then the Pacific nations in this country. So remember, we are Indigenous to the Pacific, and we all live in the Pacific, but at the same time, how do we reconnect, and what does that look like for blackbirding histories, possibly?
Yeah,
you know, because they blackbirded the Pacific. So how do we connect through commonality, and how do we reconnect with our cultures, identity, so on and so forth? So we've been working with the New South Wales Council for Pacific Communities to look at collaborative projects and inclusion. And so that's the biggest project at the moment, is working on trying to secure a home for an organisation that celebrates Australian South Sea Islanders inclusively of, you know, other nations. And then there's the workshop, Black. So we've been funded by Multicultural New South Wales, $49,000, to deliver two workshops, one in Western Sydney and one on the Tweed. And they are specifically youth-driven. So it's about young people, Zachary Wohn, who's taking the lead as the coordinator, here in Sydney, and he'll be, or we have been, I'm the project manager, but we've been talking to a lot of different organisations and community people in sharing the history, looking at the commonality, looking at, you know, leadership, awareness, culture and knowledge. And Dwayne Vickery, who does a lot of the work in Indigenous leadership and Prime Minister and Cabinet, he's done a lot of stuff in the Torres Strait and Northern Territory and in a lot of Aboriginal communities, he's coming on board to actually sort of bring it all together. And we hope to get some, you know, great artists like Last Connection, who are also South Sea descent, and, you know, maybe, I don't know, Radical Sun, Sean Chulbra, just people like that to come in and share knowledge. Romaine Morton, she's on board with us for the Tweed workshop, and as you know, she does amazing spoken word and is also of South Sea Island descent, so she's actually my cousin, but yeah, or our cousin.
Well, there's a lot of mob but, out there, isn't there? When you look at the NRL, you look at how many South Sea Islanders are in the NRL now, so I think it's becoming a lot more visible that we start to promote our culture.
You know, it's all about, exactly, it is. It's South Sea pride, you know, and don't be shy. Just, you know, I think we need to own it as people of colour, because we don't forget that we are a small part of a bigger picture in the world, you know, and that is oppression of people of colour. That's my take on it anyway.
That's very good. I was just wondering, a lot of this, the New South Wales government or New South Wales actually seems to be a lot more supportive of these sort of programs. Compared to Queensland, and you think that a lot of South Sea Islanders live in Queensland. Is there a reason for that? Is it just because you have that group and you've been able to lobby more successfully down in New South Wales?
I think Queensland, you know, it's quite Australia's racist on the whole, but I mean, Queensland, I mean, policies and legislation and stuff like that, and Queensland is a very racist state, and the White Australia policy actually informed South Africa, didn't it? Or they adopted,
yeah, well, the Queensland Protection Act, which they used to round up blackfellas and put them in reserves. You know, that was informed the apartheid laws over in South Africa. So, and we just elected Pauline Hanson. I think that says it all, doesn't
it? It's bizarre. And you know, the people speak. So, through democratic elections. So, you know what I mean? Like, there's a lot to be thought of. But, you know, and I think New South Wales, it's a bit more, I think there's a heavier multicultural sort of thing going on here somehow, and a bit more open-mindedness. But at the same time, you know, we're not sitting in those chairs of, I guess, you know, ministerial positions. And that's another consideration, is that, you know, maybe we need to think about how do we get more politicians from our mob
into Parliament and change the thinking, you know? You've got to tackle it from the head, don't you, really?
Yeah, and I mean, it just sounds like things are really heating up at the moment, so maybe in the future we'll see that, I guess, as time goes on and that your efforts start to pay off as well.
Well, hopefully we need black perspectives, you know? Doesn't matter who you are, just, you know, I think everybody needs to get in there. If you're a person of colour and try and take responsibility and take the lead on, not that you're not taking responsibility, but, you know, like really be strategic in how you're sort of combating some of these issues that we're facing today. And it's, you know, I think it makes the world a better place somehow.
If people want to find out, a lot of our listeners obviously might have South Sea Islander heritage as well. If they want to find out a bit more about what you're doing and how they can get involved, where would be the best place they would go?
We've got a website, which is www.assipj.com.au, www.assipj.com.au, or they can call me and I can hook them up with an email address and put them on our database. My number is 0416 300 946.
Great. So that's a lot of places people could go. And thank you so much, Imelda, for joining me on this program. And hopefully it's the start of a broader conversation. So I really appreciate that today.
Yeah, no. Thank you so much, Amy. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. That was Imelda Davis, who's the president of Australian South Sea Islander Association Port Jackson. Ending that there on how you can go about finding out more about that organisation and how you can get involved. And of course, we'll put all the details up on our website, 989fm.com.au, if you want to check out that chat again. Or we'll put it up on our Facebook page, Let's Talk. So just Google Facebook Let's Talk. You should be able to find us, or 98.9 for the best country. And you should be able to find us there and a lot of those details. But also, you can just get on to us at the radio station if you want to find out a bit more. So that's all we have time for today on Let's Talk. Tomorrow we'll be broadcasting live from Musgrave Park for NAIDOC Week. It's interesting, NAIDOC, isn't it? I don't think of it as any different week. I mean, it's NAIDOC Week every week here at the radio station, so I'm a bit bamboozled when there's quite a big deal, particularly white organisations making a big deal about it, because shouldn't you be appreciating Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander heritage every single day? So I find that quite amusing, and I think maybe the tide is turning a little bit, I don't know. But regardless, I think Musgrave Park and the day down there is a great community fun day, great day to get out and hang out with mob and be immersed in community, you know, one of those great days. So we'll be broadcasting live from down in Musgrave Park. Come down and say hello. We'll have the big OB van down there tomorrow. I'll be broadcasting Let's Talk from there as well. And then myself and Clay Casadale will be talking live from Musgrave Park tomorrow. So come down and say hello and let me know if you have any story ideas that I should be following up. But that's all we have time for today. I hope everyone has a great Thursday, and I'll see you tomorrow.